So this is Suba. Everybody knows Suba. Suba, say hi.
Hi.
Be nice to her.
Okay, so today's lecture is about RF cavities. And we'll see how what kind of cavities are there and not go too deep into really applying to the accelerator level, but yet still learn about the fundamentals of the cavities. So if you are really interested, or if you guys end up working in an accelerator, I wish you guys end up working in an accelerator because it's so much fun. But you can apply what you are learning today in designing cavities and making them better. So I thought I'll start with this one, not to scare you guys off. So I don't think I have seen most of these cavities myself. So these are old corneal type cavities. So I put this slide to kind of show you guys what kind of real type cavities are out there. So we call these elliptical cavities. This is a single cell. You can see how tiny this one is and how big this one is. And this is a multicell. And here you see additional stuff on the beam pipe. So this is the cavity cell, and we call these two connecting ones the beam pipe of the cavity. And this is a multicell elliptical cavity. I think this is a LHC one.
I think so.
I think it's the LHC 400 megahertz cavity. This one you'll probably get to see. This is the CBAF 5 cell cavity, so you'll see that in the open house. And this one is a 1300 megahertz 9 cell cavity. This is a very famous design or cavity type, which is going to be in the International Linear Collider if it ever comes. And also, it's also the base design or the base frequency for many fundamental research in cavities and materials. So apart from these, you see other shapes which we call cavities. These are called triple spoke cavities because they look like bicycle spokes attached to the cavity, right? And you can have single spoke, many multi-spoke, double spoke, and so on. This is a half wave cavity. What it's inside is a coax tube like that, but it doesn't end here, but it goes all the way through. So it has it's like a coax cable, but enlarged. So that's a half wave cavity. And similar to that family is a quarter wave cavity. So this gap is quarter of the wavelength. And this is a single spoke cavity. So there's so many varieties of cavity types out there. And these are all we call falls into the category of accelerating cavities. There's also a cavity type which we call deflecting or the crabbing, which does not accelerate the particle. And that's my field of expertise. Surprisingly, I haven't worked on accelerating cavities. So, but we'll not go into any of those. So I just wanted you guys to have a look at and see what kind of cavities exist. But we'll be most looking into this kind of simple shapes, but more than that, like this shape, like cylindrical cavities, than any of those fancy shapes. Okay. So to start with, so you guys are taking EM2 at the moment, right? All of you pretty much. So you must have a solved, since it's EM2, wave equations already, I believe. Okay, that's totally okay. So we'll start with Maxwell's equations as usual. So all these cavities are electromagnetic design, has a inside a electric field and a magnetic field. So what you try to do is, for that given shape, you try to solve what's the electric field in the cavity, what is the magnetic field in the cavity. So all you will be doing is basically simple electrodynamics. And since you guys haven't started on the EM2, we'll categorize the electromagnetic fields in the cavity into TM, TE. Those solutions are simply the roots of Bessel functions. We'll get into that. And then, since we are talking in terms of accelerator design, not just understand the electromagnetic field or the electromagnetic the fields inside the cavity, will be extending how to determine and apply those RF concepts into defining some of the accelerator parameters that would be related to a real machine. So, starting with the Maxwell's equations, these are the four Maxwell's equations. So, you all know all of these by now very well, I believe. And what we, so this is the general set of Maxwell's equations. Okay, so based on the boundary conditions, we'll be solving these Maxwell's equations. We're combining some of those equations to create to determine the electromagnetic field inside the cavity. Okay, so, I'll go back once. So this is the charge density, and this is the current density, and this is electric field, and H is defined as the magnetic field. The D and the B are defined as the flux densities. But then sometimes in cavity designs, people call E and B as the electric field and the magnetic field. So it might be slightly confusing, and I might be doing the same too because I'm so accustomed to just having E and B and not E and H. But by the right definition, E and H are the electric field and the magnetic field, and these two are the corresponding flux density for both electric and magnetic field. So this is how the electric flux density relates to the electric field with the electric permittivity, and same way the magnetic flux density is related to the magnetic field with the permeability. Okay, so this, if you consider a vacuum inside, this is the vacuum permittivity, and mu naught is the vacuum permeability, and these multiplication of those two factors are always equal to 1 over c squared. So if you have defined E squared, if you have found E and H, and if you just do a EH multiplication, it's also equals to 1 over c squared. So you can simply find vice versa if you know one or the other. So when we have a cavity structure, we have an outer surface, right? So if you look something like this, if I just open it up, it's hollow inside, right? So it's the same scenario with the cavity. You have outer shell. So all these cavities that we saw, this is the outer surface that you see, and inside is just hollow. And outside is a metal, right? It can be copper, and those we call copper, the category, there's two types of cavities. One is normal conducting cavities, one is called superconducting cavities. The normal conducting cavities are mostly copper. We do have aluminum and maybe, aluminum cavities too, but those are mostly like just prototype cavities. And then the superconducting cavities can be niobium or niobium-coated copper cavities. So the conductivity changes based on what kind of material it is, but in operation, the cavity operates under vacuum. So inside the cavity is always a vacuum. So what we'll be dealing with is the vacuum permittivity and vacuum permeability. So you'll have epsilon naught of this much and mu naught of this one. So we do not need to worry about the relative values when we talk about the cavity. So when we have a structure, even though inside is just hollow and we operate it under vacuum, in order to determine the field contained inside the cavity, we need to know the boundary conditions. So we solve the Maxwell equations with boundary conditions, and that's how we determine the fields inside the cavity. So these are the important boundary conditions that we need to know. So I already mentioned this one, so no dielectric or magnetic material inside. So we'll be having just mu naught and epsilon naught. And then at the surface, what we need to know is between the two mediums, what's the boundary conditions on the fields, and then based on the surface charge and the current densities. So the parallel E component, so if you have a surface like this, if you have a parallel E component along the surface, it needs to be continuous between the two media. And if you have a magnetic field, which is perpendicular, that needs to be continuous. So that means if you have an E parallel, there's no E tangential. That's always zero at the boundary. And if you have a B tangential, which is perpendicular to the surface, B parallel component is zero. Okay? So that's what it means by the top two. And then the boundary condition on the flux density on D is dependent on the charge density, and then the H is dependent on the current density. So when you have a vacuum, you can simply boil it down to just having the E parallel and the basically E parallel continuous and B transverse continuous. And you can solve the Maxwell equations. So we had four equations here, right? So how do we solve this one to get the electromagnetic profile inside a given volume? Here's how we do it. So we come down to what we call the wave equation. And you get that by, so you have grad cross E from here, okay? And you do another grad cross and simplify this formula, okay? So you can do either grad cross E, or grad cross H. And then what you get end up is two identical wave equations, okay? So you can solve this one or this one to start solving the wave equation. So it's not, you don't need to solve both the set. So if you found from here the profile of E, and you know, right, grad cross E gives you the change in B. So likewise, you can find the B. So you can write this formula in a general form. If you define either E or H as arbitrary function of phi, as a function of R and T. So since we are talking about cavities, the electromagnetic field inside the cavity is oscillating, right? It is also periodic. So we do have the time dependence. We do have the time dependence in the cavity for the oscillating fields. And then R can be based on either cylindrical. If it is cylindrical, it's R and phi, and can also have Z. If it is Cartesian, you can have X, Y, Z. So you can solve it to not just cylindrical, you can solve it to rectangular shapes or any other shape if you can define the coordinate system. You can even do spherical cavity too, if it's a tough problem to solve. So combining these wave equations, and what you get is the time dependence form, and then the other form based on the coordinates, either r theta, r phi z, or x, y, z. So we'll see how we can define this term by solving the wave equation. Okay, so before we go into that, we can just quickly look at the plane waves. So the solution of the wave equation can be written as this, right? So you have the time dependence, and you have the dependence on the shape. And if you define, you can define both E with the magnitude with E naught, and then B naught this way. This will both satisfy the wave equation. So we define an additional parameter, which is called the wave number, okay, which is defined as a 2 pi over wavelength. This is the RF wavelength that relates to the frequency of the cavity. It's also defined as k equals omega over c. It's not here. So you can define it as this, and it's same as this. I need to switch. So it's the same definition, okay? So we'll come to omega over c part in a little while. So you can define the plane waves. If you calculate, if you solve the wave equation, and if you if you can find a relationship between B and E, and so it's K cross, which is the wave propagation, which defines a wave propagation. So B is equal to the wave propagation cross E divided by pi omega. So in a cavity, so plane waves, what happens is it need not have a boundary, right? It can continuously propagate. But the difference between plane waves and standing waves is in a cavity, what we have is standing waves because we have boundary. So if you define a right, so this is not the exact field profile I'm drawing. So you can have a wave propagating in it, and then it can reflect back from the surface, right? And it travels back. So I'm just drawing an arrow. This creates a standing wave in the cavity, right? So that's the idea of how the fields look like inside the cavity. So same way, this electric and the magnetic field that we define in the plane wave properties, we can rewrite them as this way, because this is the moving forward wave and this is the wave that's coming back from the opposite direction. And likewise, you can write it for the magnetic field as well. So this is also a solution into the in the wave equation that you can, what we will be using for the cavities. So now moving on to solving the electromagnetic field, before we will go into the cavities, we will try to do what's called waveguides. Okay, in the waveguides, the difference is you will have a cylindrical waveguide or a rectangular waveguide. So if I in a waveguide, we have a outer surface, okay? But there's no boundary at the entrance or the exit. So it's a hollow structure without ends. Same way, you can define a rectangular waveguide. You'll have simply a box kind of structure, but no closing ends. But the difference in the cavity is we have a boundary. So when in the waveguide, what you have is simply the radius and the angle, right? So in the same here, what you have is simply X and Y coordinates and no Z dependence because it's continuous. So, if you expand this wave equation for the cylindrical coordinates, okay, this is what the equation would look like, right? And if you apply the boundary conditions, the following boundary conditions, where the E needs to be, the E parallel and B perpendicular to be continuous, or the E tangential and the B parallel are zero. And if you solve the boundary conditions with R and phi, these are the solutions. So this general formula that we wrote as the solution, okay, we had the time dependence, and this is the based on the shape. Now this R will have two coordinates like this, which is dependent on the radius of the cylindrical waveguides and dependent on the angle. And now we have the field as a dependence, how it changes radially, the electric field that changes radially. So if you solve this one with the boundary conditions, you can get these solutions. So maybe you can do it as a practice, or probably you'll be end up doing it in your EM2 class. even if you don't feel like doing it for this class. And this is the same wave number that we defined as 2 pi over lambda. It's same thing, we now defined it as omega over c. Because we'll be talking about cutoff frequency, so it's easy to define it this way. Because when we talk about cavities, we talk about in terms of frequency more than the wavelength. So that's why we mostly use k defined as omega over c. So this gives the full field profile for the cylindrical waveguide. E depends on r, E depends on the angle theta, and then the corresponding magnetic field, and the corresponding magnetic field with the theta dependence. Okay, so this one slightly changed. So I said initially we can categorize these fields based on TM and TE, right? Before we go into the TM and TE, there's another type which is called the DEM, which is called the transverse electromagnetic mode. This particular type mode is what you see in a coaxial, right? So if you take a coaxial cable, you'll have a outer conductor like this, and you'll have a center conductor like this. So how the field propagates inside a coaxial type structure, this is how what we get the fields for the TEM modes. So the basic mode of this one is where you have the field, the electric field radially going outward like this. So, and then you have the magnetic field circling around. Is it this one? I can't see. Yes. Okay. So in here, we'll be defining a term called cutoff frequency, which we can define for both waveguides as well as cavities. However, for TEM modes, there's no actually cutoff frequency. So if you simplify the wave equation and try to calculate the cutoff frequency, there's no cutoff frequency for TEM type structures. Okay, so let's go on to TM modes for a cylindrical type waveguide. So the TM transverse magnetic one, the important thing to remember is the longitudinal magnetic field, the Z component is always zero. Okay, so since HZ is zero, EZ is not zero. So HZ means the longitudinal magnetic field along the tube. So if we go back to the cylinder, so we just said that in a TM mode, HC is always zero and EZ is not zero. Okay, so that means there is a longitudinal electric field along the waveguide, but no magnetic field. But can somebody tell me why the magnetic field has to be, the longitudinal magnetic field, why it cannot exist while the longitudinal electric field is there? Yes, exactly. So if you have a longitudinal electric field, since the magnetic field has to be perpendicular to that, right, there cannot be two parallel components existing at the cavity. So it actually simplifies the cavities when you try to solve the wave equations, because since they are always perpendicular, what happens is in a solution some of these components end up being zero, right? If you have an ER, right, and then perpendicular to that, if you have a H theta, then you cannot have a HR. It's much simpler if you do the Cartesian coordinates to picturize it than cylindrical. But we do cylindrical ones because this is closer to what we'll end up learning in the real type of cavities than rectangular shape. And then, vice versa, in the TE type cavities or TE type waveguides, what you have is a non-zero magnetic field, and the longitudinal EZ is always zero. Okay? So based on these boundary conditions, you can separate the variables, you can write the solution, and separate it in terms of R dependence and the theta dependence separately, and then apply the boundary conditions, right? At R equals A, EZ and E theta needs to be zero. So this comes from these boundary conditions that we talked about. So when you apply these boundary conditions and solve this equation, this comes into simply solutions as Bessel equations. Okay, so it would be fun to solve this one if you feel like. So there's two equations that you just need to solve. This is like a simple harmonic equation, and then you have a little bit additional term here that you can solve into. Okay, so the solutions would be either first kind or the second kind. What we mostly end up having is, what we actually have is the first kind Bessel functions and not the second kind. So the EZ can be written as a function of R, theta, and time dependence, and this is how it will look like. Okay, so it will have a cosine theta and a sine theta with two constants. So you'll have either one, not both of them, based on the how you pick the field. And then you have the radial dependence, which is a solution of the Bessel function. Okay, so one important thing to pay attention to is, so when you solve this one, okay, you define your propagation constant, this is the k, as the zeroth of the Bessel function. This is nj, this is the nth odd. I'll define this one later when I come into the more details. But we define with two indices here, with n and j, okay? And one thing important to keep in mind is some of the books use these letters differently. So I stick to this one because these books use n and j, but I'm more used to m and n. M and N, and some people use different letters. So just don't go by just the number if you read between books. If you just stick to one, and one reason I don't use like J is because J is the one that I used to apply for the phase shift for like the complex.
J is like square root of minus
yeah,
one.
Square root of like minus that. One. So it confuses, and. And here, A is the radius of the waveguide. And in here, the first solution is the TM01. And then this is how you can visualize the fields. Okay, so this I said is the simplest mode, and this is actually the most important one in a symmetrical waveguide extending into cavities, because when we have cavities, we'll have another index, and that 010 is the accelerating mode in the cavity. So here, the 0 is n and 1 is j, right? So if you apply x01, anybody remembers how much is the root of the Bessel? The simple first order Bessel function x01, the value, just top of your head. No, that's fine. It's no, it's 2.4005.
2.4, yeah.
Yeah, that's okay. I was just kidding. it wasn't the test question. No, okay. So based on going on these different. As we increase this order, you can see how the field changes, right? So this is the simplest form, and this is the 02, okay? And it's so hard to visualize.
Yeah, maybe draw it on the paper.
Paper, maybe that's better. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can see the arrow. This is pointing in one direction and this is pointing in direction. And here, see you how the condensed the lines here and line here. So that means it goes through a zero because it changes the direction, right? One is rotating in one direction. Oh, this mouse. And the other one is rotating in that other direction. So it's kind of gives you the magnitude of the field too if you go across the R. So now you can see how. So now you can tell me which one relates to which. So N relates to what? And so N and J relates to R and theta, right? So can you guys tell me which one relates to which parameter? So we just talked about going from 0,1 to 0,2, right? And the field changes across R, right? Here it's if you look like that, it's in rotating in the same direction, right? Here it rotates first in this direction and then next in this direction. So it goes through a zero and index change from 0,1 to 0,2. So that means J relates to R, right? Do you guys see that? Okay, and now if I come here, compare between these two. Okay, so it's 0,1 and 1,1, right? So the second index is the same, but first index changed from 0 to 1. So that means your angle changed, right? It's kind of split in two. So 0,1 is like the full circle, and going in 1 is like it's splitting in half, right? So the reason I'm explaining it this way is, say then somebody just tells you it's a TM11, so you should be able to correlate 1,1 to which is R, which is theta, and then be able to kind of reconstruct in your head how the field profile would look like. So that's kind of the idea that I'm trying to give you. And then if we compare from here to this one, okay, now we didn't change the angle, right? So the angle is N. So maybe I'll write down. It's easy to track later on then. So we had N and J. So N relates to what and J relates to what?
A and R.
All right. Okay. So good job. So going from here to here, okay, we didn't change the angle, right? It's still same as here. But going from 1 to 2, it should change radially, right? So now you can see here, it's so hard to see the arrows, but if you look carefully in here, it's same as here. In the middle part, it's rotating in like this direction, okay? And then it needs to go through a zero and then start going in this direction. Yes.
Is there an upper limit to N?
No. So actually there's no upper limit. So when you solve the wave equation, you can have infinite number of solutions, right? It would be fun to calculate, as I said. And then you can get the solutions based on, and what you see is as you go higher and higher, the fields get complicated, right? So
if you go high enough, you might start approaching quantum, quantum length scales, at which point, yes, it probably, things do break down, right? So infinite is a bad word in physics, right? Because yeah. There's, we don't have infinite anything necessarily. But in practicality, certainly according to the math, Suba's absolutely right.
Yeah.
There are an infinite number of modes that you can fit in for arbitrarily small wavelengths.
It's like having the eigensolution. So it doesn't have a limit, right? So imagine fitting in like 10 of those. Like here there's only 4, right?
Yeah.
How hard would it be to put 10 in there and things like that. So practically we won't have any cavities operating in like that. Most important mode would be TM01 and TM11, right? Accelerating
much,
and
yeah.
The deflecting one.
Yeah. The other thing is once you, almost like many other physical systems, higher frequencies are harder to excite. Lower frequencies are easier to excite. They contain more energy. in a larger area, right? So for cavities, at least, you generally talk in terms of the fundamentals and things close to the fundamentals. It's just like our magnets, right? You can get infinite multipoles, but generally you don't really care about the infinite multipoles because they don't really do, you know, they aren't very strong unless you build the magnets that way. You care about the lowest harmonic for which to develop something. It's just like a drum. The drum has an infinite number of modes. You hit the drum, Ted, what do you hear? You hear the fundamental and some other modes depending on where you hit the drum head on its surface, but you don't hear the really high order modes.
Okay, so this is an example for the TEM type one where you have a quark structure inside, okay? And it defines how the n changes there with n equals 0 and n equals 1. So n equals 0, if you look at in here, the field is outward and the field is inward. So that is the lowest mode for that one. When you go to n equals 1, okay, it needs to go another order. So the field is inward here, this is outward and inward around here, and then outward here. So you can go n equals 0, 1, 2, like that. And if you don't have this one, okay, if you have only this one, this is what I'll go back to the very beginning. Okay, this is how the fields look like in this particular cavity, which I said there's a coax line inside and an outer, just a cylinder. So that would be just a simple half wave cavity. Okay, so that would
and
be
in
just
fact, the fundamental looks like half a wave.
Yeah, it would be. It would be not identical field like that. It would be like smaller at the end and goes like this. Oh, can you see? Yes. Like that. Yeah, they're not so as pretty as what you draw. Okay. Alright, so now, okay, so I said I'll come back to this a little later defining the cutoff frequency. Okay, so when you have a structure, there is a frequency that below that, actually the modes will be kind of trapped inside that volume, and then above that frequency, you can have the modes propagating. This is also what defines the frequency of that structure. Okay, so when you solve the wave equation, okay, you get this formula. Okay, it's kind of hard to explain without deriving it, but this relates to the zeroth order of the Bessel solution of so x and j means it's a solution from the first zero, the j, just j first order, and if you have x prime, that's the j, the derivative of the j. We'll have that kind of solutions in TE type ones. For the TM, what we have is just solutions from the Bessel function J. So you define the cutoff frequency, which is the lowest frequency, and it's equal to just speed of light times the zeroth of the Bessel function, and then divided by the radius of the cavity. Okay, so what I don't know whether you count it for homework or not, but what I want you guys to do is to tell me what the frequencies of this two cavities are. And
here's a ruler
you guys can measure. It's
does anybody else have a ruler?
No.
No.
And
so
then
I can just measure and then we can.
Yeah, and I have a notebook analyzer. We can measure it too.
Okay.
I'll plug that in.
So write down the length of those and.
Yeah, write down meters. The radius and the length. You would need both because I want you to calculate it for another higher order mode too.
So. Ooh, you're evil. I like it.
Just for the fun. So now, so far what we did is the solution to a cylindrical waveguide, right? We didn't had a boundary condition on the ends. What if we close the ends? Okay, so what if we close the two ends in a waveguide? It becomes a cavity, okay? And what we have in the LINAC or in an accelerator to accelerate particles is cavities. But you might wonder why we learned about waveguides. It's actually the simplest form of cavity with only just a one more dimension less. Also, we use waveguides in the cavities to suppress these other modes. So that's, I don't think I have a picture of that. So let me see whether I can come here and show. Okay, I think if you look, okay, in here you can see a additional piece going here. This is a rectangular waveguide, okay? So this is a two Fiesel CBAF cavities, okay, that you'll probably end up seeing in the open house. And here this is a rectangular waveguide attached to the cavity. And what it does is it...
You just broke your cavity.
No.
I was
not
joking.
Breakable.
I was joking.
Yeah. So these waveguides, what we're doing here is it's put on the cavity to extract some of those higher order modes. So here the cavity is operating at 1500, right? If you look at the wave equation solution, it can have many more solutions, right? So there's many more modes just than the mode that we are interested at. So those modes are not good in an accelerating cavity or any cavity structure. So we have to make sure in a real accelerator, those modes are not causing us a problem. So what we do is we put waveguides. We also have cylindrical type coax couplers too that we would be extracting those modes. So it's like just telling how we will be using those. In a real cavity. So now let's go into the cavity part. Okay. So now when we solve the wave equation, so we define initially for the waveguide, it's the initial part based on the shape as r and theta, right? Now in addition to r and theta, for a cylindrical cavity, we have an additional term. And that would be what? Z, that's right. Okay, so this is a cross-section of a cylindrical cavity with a diameter of 2a and a small aperture for beam to pass through with 2b with a length L. So this is the fundamental mode that we will be talking about. I'll come to describe this one later. So this is the same one that you are measuring. He's calling it the tuna fish can. I call it the cookie cavity. You can call it whatever you like.
Pillbox.
The real word is actually, the side of the scientific word is the pillbox cavity. That's the real name. Okay. So now, in addition to the cylindrical surface, we have two other boundaries, right? The at the front and at the back of the cavity. So in the front and the back of the cavity, the edge Z, okay, so this defines the full set of the boundary conditions for the cavity. So if you look at the first two, this is at Z equals 0 and this is at Z equals L. So that means it's here and it's at here. So for any given R and theta at the two ends or the two flat surfaces, the HZ would be 0. So that means there's no longitudinal magnetic field up at the surface. Yes. And then if you look at the second line, okay, this is E radial and E, this is the radial dependence of E and this is the angle dependence of E, which is ER and E theta. at the z equals 0, and this is at z equals L, which is also 0. So these are the boundary conditions for a 3D geometry. Earlier what we looked at was the waveguide, which is a 2D structure, right? So once you solve that, we same as in the waveguide, we have two sets of solutions. One is the TE and one is the TM. So we already had N and J. Now in addition, we have another index, which is M. So the M would be the dependence of what?
Z.
Z, exactly. So same way that we had for a cylindrical waveguide, same way, you can solve with the new boundary conditions, ER, TER, theta, and Z, and then get the solution, which is going to look like this. Okay, so this is the HZ, and this is the Bessel function, KC, dependent on KC, the wave number, and the radius, and the cosine and the sine dependence based on the angle. In addition, we have a length dependence. So this is what gives us the periodicity in the structure. Okay, so if M equals 0, what is sine 0? 0. So then it gives you HZ equals 0. But that means it needs to be M equals 1 or above, right, to have a solution in HZ, right? Okay. And the wave number is defined as omega over c squared, and now has this term m pi over l squared. L is the length of the cavity. Okay. And for TE modes, okay, what we have is the derivative of the Bessel functions of order n, okay, and this equal to 0 gives us the x prime n j, which is the jth root of order n. So based on that, we can define the cutoff frequency for TE type modes as this way. Okay, so what I was going to ask was I'll tell it in while. What I just want you to calculate three frequencies for these two cavities, the two cookie cavities or the pillbox cavities. One is 010, the other one is 110, and the other one is, it's in the note, 020. Okay, so the field profile is in the notes, so we'll come to that in a little bit.
What are the frequency, what are the numbers again?
010.
110.
Yeah, 110. So so this is one. TM010 is one of the modes, and TM020 and TM110. It's because it's the field profiles are given in the note, so I thought I'll pick these three. And okay. Alright. So for the lowest mode, when M equals 0, the cutoff frequency has no dependence on the L, right? And then M equals 1 or above is what gives you the other cutoff frequencies for TE. So I'm not asking any TE, that's fine. Okay, so if you had solved the wave equation by yourself, this is the general form of the solution for NJ, for the TE type modes. One thing I should say is this, I just copied from my dissertation, and R is A. I'll change that. I notice later.
That's okay.
Yeah, because otherwise it's kind of confusing. We went everywhere by the definition of A and L, and all the diagrams are A and L, and here I jump into L and R. So I'll fix that. But this is the general solution. So with this set of equations, you can figure out the field profile for any mode you like. Actually, TE modes are not that much important for us in accelerating cavities. But these are high order modes that will still exist in any cavity. So the other set of modes, which is the TM, is the TM and JM, we define it this way, okay? So N is the theta dependent, and J is the R dependence, and M is the Z dependence. Okay, so in TM type modes, the longitudinal magnetic is zero everywhere. Okay, and the solution is look like that. Here what we have is the first kind of Bessel functions as the solution, and Z dependence is a cosine form when you solve it, and again same as in TE modes, this is the term that defines the periodicity. So same as here, okay, based on increasing the order of the M, you will have separation of fields or higher orders just like this one, okay? But this is for a coax cavity, but you can look into other modes, other higher order modes, to see how the periodicity change. And for TM modes, this is the formula for the cutoff frequency. So the mode that we are interested in accelerating cavity is called the TM010, and this is the lowest mode or the simplest form of the field in any field box type structure. Okay, so here N equals zero means there's no theta variation, right? And then R equals one, that's the lowest R you can go, so there's no zeros that's crossing between one single R, and then Z equals zero, or M equals zero gives the periodicity of for a simple pillbox type cavity with a TM010. So again, same as in the TE, this is the general set of equations where you can find the solution for any TM type mode. So as we said here, in TM type modes, there's no longitudinal magnetic field, right? For TE, there's no longitudinal electric field. For TM, there's no longitudinal magnetic field. So that's why HC is zero for all the modes. Now, if we go to the TM010, okay, if I simplify this set of equations with N equals 0, J equals 1, and M equals 0, there's five equations, right? HZ is always 0. These five equations just come down to these two. All the other components are 0. Okay, so all you have is a longitudinal electric field and a magnetic field that goes around the cavity in a cylindrical at the surface like this. So this is just a cross section. On the left image, you have the electric field much higher at the center, and as you go out zero, it going down. And can somebody tell me what happened to EZ at the surface? Just a guess. Okay, let me go back to one of the very first slides that we said. Okay. It needs to be zero, right? Because it's going through this, it's at the surface now. It's the simple boundary conditions that we talked about earlier. So electric field is maximum at the center, and then as it goes out, it's zero here. And magnetic field is maximum at the surface. This is going into the surface and this is coming out, right? It just circles around the cavity like this way. So this is the fundamental mode, which is the TM010. And if you simplify this cutoff frequency, okay, this is what gives you the TM010. So now you have the radius and you can calculate what the frequency for the TM010 for these two cavities. And then we can look into two other modes. One is TM020. So if J goes to 2, K Can somebody tell me what happens? What changes, R or theta or Z? If you kind of followed.
Theta.
Yes, theta, right? So if you look at here, so this is the definition, it's NJM, N equals 0, which is theta dependence. It's actually, J is R, right? It's not theta dependence. So if you look at the field, along the angle, it hasn't changed, right? The angle changes this way, or we can take it this way. So it didn't change in this way. But if you go looking into the radial direction, okay, it's going in this direction, and as you go outward, it goes through a zero and goes in the other direction. So this two is the change in radius. So if you look at the cross section, you can see that it goes through a zero. So what if it is 0, 3, 0? What would happen? How many zeros I would have starting from center going out? Two. Yeah, exactly. So you can now, so now if you hear, and if you guys still remember, if you now hear the change in the index, now you can figure out how the fields look like in a cavity, right? So when we deal with cavities and other modes other than the fundamental mode, you will be hearing modes with this kind of index, right? So sometimes you are just being thrown with a number, okay, TM this, this, this. So if you think carefully now, you can kind of pictureize or visualize the fields in the cavity, right, based on each index and how they change, right? Okay, I hope I convinced you guys in that one. Okay, so this particular one, okay, so far, if you look at the TM010 and TM020, at the center, what you have is electric field, right? At the center. So in order to accelerate particles, what you need is a longitudinal electric field along the axis. Okay, that's what gives energy to the particles. We'll see how to calculate that one, hopefully, today, if not Thursday. But if you come to this particular mode, can somebody tell me the difference in this one compared to the previous two?
There is a change.
I'm sorry?
There is a change.
Yeah, that too. But if you look at now, at the center of the cavity, okay, electric field is almost zero on the axis. Okay? And what you have is a magnetic field on axis. So can we use this one to accelerate particles? Yeah, you cannot. But what do you think you can do now since you have an on-axis magnetic field? Deflect them, exactly. So if you look at the Lorentz force equation, what you have is E plus V cross B, right? So there's no E term or EZ to accelerate the particle. But you still have a V cross B term. So you can use this one to basically deflect the beam. So we do have in CBAF machine what we call RF separators, which has a on-axis magnetic field. Okay, it's not simply 110 type mode, but a little complex than that. But what still uses is the magnetic field and also a little bit of electric field because it's a different type of cavity to deflect the particle. So that's how, if you know a little bit of CBAF and if you remember what the picture showed by Todd, you have three experimental halls, right? So you have one beam coming out, but you need to run the three halls at the same time. So you need to break the beam so that you can give a little bit to A and a little bit to B and a little bit to C. So what you do is you use this kind of cavity and to split the beam so you can operate all the three halls in CBAF. Okay. So now you see, even in a cavity, though we always say it's accelerating cavities, it need not necessarily have always electric field at the axis. It can have magnetic field too, and not just being an accelerating cavity. Okay. So now that we looked into how to determine the fields in a cavity, let's try to relate it to a real accelerating cavity, okay? So we'll still go with a pillbox cavity In order to accelerate the particles, what we are interested in this TM010 mode, right, which has a longitudinal electric field on axis, but the magnetic field is way out into the outer surface. So this cavity is just simply a LRC kind of circuit. You can relate a cavity and draw the equivalent circuit and try to determine the other properties of the cavity. So if you, I just put a picture that kind of simplifies the idea of converting a pillbox cavity into a simple LRC circuit. Here what we have is an inductance, and between the two plates what you have is capacitance, right? So you have two plates, say that there's a particle going through and there's a capacitance that makes the particle move, but if you connect them through a coil, it has a little bit of inductance, right? So, and transform this one into the way that it's shown here, okay? And instead of just two plates, what you have is simply electric field inside, and say that instead of a coil, we kind of connect the two surfaces with the surface. So you'll have same way that it has a current going on, you'll have a current going on through the surface, right? So say that now you connect not just the top and the bottom of the surface, but you connect all the surfaces like this, right? So you can transform it to a cylindrical cavity like this, right? And then you deform the shape and then just make it a pillbox type. So what you have is electric field at the center, and then just the magnetic field that goes around the cavity. So these two field components in here, you can relate it to just the inductance part and the capacitance part using just the equivalent circuit. So we use this capacitance and inductance when we talk about resistance and calculating the impedances. But we will not go into that much detail in this lecture. But let's try to see how we can use this basic TM010 mode to accelerate particle. This is delta. It didn't go well. I'll retype the these two equations. But okay, so we said that in a TM010 mode, what we have is these two components, right? The general set of equations come down to just two of these simple equations. Out of these two, what we are interested is on the electric field at the center, right? That's what accelerates the particle. So if I go, just take this one, and here's that formula. And then what we are more interested is at the very center, at the axis, right? So when R equals 0, what you have is this one. So just the amplitude of the field. So this is just the E0. And what we have is an oscillating field with the time dependence of this one, right? And then you can integrate this easy using following the Lorentz equation. And that gives you how much energy gain you can get out of the field. So this equation is all. Let me try.
It's Windows and Mac.
Yeah.
PowerPoint thing, I think.
Let me try to at least write down.
You can, write it down.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry about it, but that's what actually gives helps you to calculate the total energy gain by this cavity. Okay. So these are the two formulas. And if you had integrated along the z, so say that your pillbox cavity is L with diameter 2a, and if you integrate it along the length, you can convert this t to and then convert it to just dependence on z and omega, and then you'll end up with a function of L. Okay, and if you look at this one, the length of the cavity needs to be around lambda half, right? In real life, the cavity length is not precisely lambda half. It varies a little bit, but in order to maintain the periodicity, what you need is that it needs to be lambda half. Okay? And if you look at here, can somebody tell me the units of this one? Is it? So E naught is the amplitude of the electric field. So what does the electric field units? Volts per meter. And you have another lambda, right, which has the units of meters. So you have in units of volt, right? And if you multiply this one by charge, what would you have? Huh? Yes. In electron volts, right? And you can convert it to energy, right? So that's how, so in CBEV, we tell it's 12 GeV, used to be 6 GeV. So that's how this gradient relates to the energy of the beam. So from one you can find the energy gain from one cavity, and you multiply by the number of cavity, then you get the total energy coming out of the accelerator. Or say that you have a particular accelerator which needs to have a beam of certain energy. Say that it's, how would I say, X. Say it's A. But then if you know how much per cavity you can have, okay, say V naught is what you get per cavity. And then if you divide this by this, you can tell how many cavities you would need in an accelerator also, right? So it goes vice versa. So if you know energy coming out of one cavity, you can tell by the number of cavities what's the energy of the total beam. Or if you know a design that requires a total energy, and then if you have a design that gives a particular V0 out of the cavity, then you can tell how many cavities you would want, right? That's how you determine how many cavities that would end up being in a machine. And then we define another parameter called gradient, okay? This is just simply defined as the voltage divided by the length, basically. So length is in lambda half. What you have is units of volts per meter. And this comes into the definition how much actually you gain out of one cavity. And the importance of this parameter is when we really build these cavities and when we test, since you know how much, so you know how much energy you need out of one cavity, right? That's delta W. And then you know how long is the cavity. And then you can tell how much gradient is needed out of one cavity. And then when you test, you can see whether you got the gradient. So I have a plot at the end. I'll show how this relates to the cavity performance. Should I stop or it's already?
It's about that time.
Yeah, so next is the cavity properties. So maybe I'll start Thursday.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
And then I'll finish up on Thursday. So.
Okay.
Ask them what the frequency is.
Did you guys calculate? How much? I even myself don't know. And I don't even radius. I thought I would calculate first. But we can measure, but maybe not today. We'll set it up Thursday early. And then we'll see whether you guys got it right.
So a nice scaling factor for those of us that work at CBAF, we know this. The CBAF cavities are each about 10 centimeters long, and it's a half a wavelength. So the wavelength is about 20 centimeters. And they just happen to be 1.5 gigahertz cavities. If you know the speed of light, 3 times 10 to the 8th, you can kind of almost do that in your head, right? 20 centimeters is 1.5 gigahertz. So you can scale to these things. You know, how many centimeters is that from 1.5 speed of light? And you can start to guess what the order of magnitude should be for these things. It should be, you know, several gigahertz. If you got megahertz, you're way, way off.
So how much did you guys get for this one, for TM010? What's the frequency?
I think
it was just nothing. Ah, there you go.
Not
Let
yet.
Them do it for...
Okay, that's fine.
We'll provide the numbers and do it for homework.